Welcome to Elephate in the Room. I am Derek Carreview, the editorial director at Elephate and your host for this podcast. With me, as always, is Christian A. Dumais, the digital content director here at Elephate. Now, I come from, as I said, I am not an SEO guy. I've been a corporate editor. I've been a magazine editor. I'm also an American guy living in Wrocław, Poland. So outsider status is my everyday thing. I wanted to learn more about the industry and more about the people within the industry, which is the purpose of this podcast. The plan here is we're going to be bringing together some of the best and brightest within the SEO and content marketing industries and beyond to not only gain insight into their knowledge, but also to discover who they are. So that's the plan for the podcast. We'll see how that goes. Now, of course, when it came time to record this one, it was one of those days. We're set up, we're ready to go, and then the CEO of Elephate decided it would be better if we were in a different part of the office. Now, he decided this 37 minutes before the recording, decides we're going to move office. So we have to move our computers, we have to move our desks. Now, we had already, fine-tuned the headphones and the microphones, and everything is ready to go. Suddenly, we have to turn off everything. So, of course, our biggest fear is nothing's going to turn back on correctly. So we actually somehow avoid that thing. But then what comes rolling in? A thunderstorm. So that's right. So we're on the fifth floor. We're at the top of the building. We've just moved everything around, and suddenly it is a dark and stormy day. And we're afraid we're going to lose power because our guest on this day is in Denver, Colorado. So there's an 8-hour difference between us. And somehow we get this off the ground. So we're very lucky to have today's guest. She is the CEO of Mobile Moxie, a mobile marketing consultancy and host of the most cutting-edge online mobile marketing and SEO toolset on the market. They work with such clients as MTV, Nickelodeon, eBay Classifieds, The Weather Channel, ABC News, Target, Kayak.com, TripAdvisor, the Chicago Tribune, and many, many more. She's credited with having invented mobile SEO, as we'll learn more about in the podcast. And she's been at mobile marketing long before the iPhone even existed. Please welcome to the podcast, Cindy Crum. Cindy, we've been told that you're a big fan of audiobooks. And we were curious as to what are you listening to right now?
Okay, well, the one I'm listening to right now is a bit, I don't know how to say it. It's feminist literature, I suppose, or it's about male-female communication, so it's not exciting. But I did just finish a book that has more broad appeal by the guy who wrote the movie Men Who Stare at Goats. Did you guys see that movie?
Well, yeah, Ron Johnson, right?
Yeah, I think so. Hold on, I'm pulling it up. So I've read two of his books, and he's kind of an odd guy. But the one that I just finished is called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And it's about the impact that public shaming has on people and about how the internet is changing public shaming and making it in some ways more permanent.
Okay. And that guy, he talks to certain people who have been basically memed over the years, right? Or like there was that woman, the woman flipping a bird at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier or something like that. So there was, okay.
Yeah. And he says, you know, these tasteless jokes are being spun out and ruining people's lives now. And previously a tasteless joke might just get you kind of privately shunned by a small group of friends, but with the internet, the pile-on effect makes it something that can ruin your life and make it impossible to get a job or things like that.
You sent me like a list of what you were listening to a few weeks ago, and I noticed that your topics were extremely broad. What is your interest? I mean, just anything, or was there like a method to your madness?
So it's a little bit of both. I do have a method to the madness, but also the method is quite broad because I just pick areas of study and then I decide I want to learn everything I can about that. And sometimes one topic starts to bleed into another, which is kind of the case for this one. And then some topics are just kind of off on their own. So I got really into financial fraud for a while and was looking at like Bernie Madoff and how does that happen? But that actually fits in really well with other topics of interest because the main interest is like groupthink.
Okay.
And how does groupthink impact us for better or worse? And so financial fraud and Bernie Madoff was actually really fits well with the groupthink topic because it was just like everyone bought in and wanted to buy in. And it was this flywheel effect of like wanting to believe it almost fits in. So the groupthink thing also goes down a cult path. Like I get really into like how do cults form and why do people fall for this stuff that seems so transparent to everyone else? But that's exactly similar to the Bernie Madoff thing. Like people want a charismatic guru and they want to believe the BS that you feed them sometimes.
Are you able to apply any of this knowledge, like that kind of specific knowledge, into what you're doing?
Well, yes and no. So groupthink has a big component in marketing because you just think of the cult of Mac, right? Like people buy what many would describe as an inferior product just because there's this exclusivity and this in-crowd aspect to it, right? And they'll pay more for a lower quality product, and then they'll argue with you that it's not lower quality,
right?
And you know, maybe there's some debate there, yes, and the user experience does matter some, but I don't know that the user experience always outweighs the lack of capabilities in comparison to other cheaper products. But I think people have a hard time saying like, no, they'll say I'm a Mac person or I'm an Apple person or I'm an iPhone person, but they won't say like I'm the in crowd and that's just how it is. I need to be part of that crowd.
Well, how about since you're listening to so many podcasts, our audiobooks, who's your dream reader? Like if you could hire anyone to read a book to you, who would that be?
Oh, that's a really great question. Maybe Sean Connery. There are a lot of really great voices. It'd be like a deep voice. But then some books sound better in women's voices. I don't know. Who would yours be? Now that was a bit personal. How about you?
Stephen Hawking.
Okay.
Leonard Cohen, maybe? Or like, or actor-wise, maybe Patrick Stewart? Derek, who would you listen to?
I would like to hear Johnny Cash reading his own autobiography. I think that would be fun.
Yes, that would be fantastic. And actually, audiobooks are about 100 times better when the actual author reads it themselves because they know exactly the intonation, and especially they know how to pronounce words. It really grates on me when the people that they hire to do an audiobook don't know the correct pronunciation of a word.
Yeah, it's fun when Neil Gaiman reads his own stories. I really enjoy that because he obviously knows what he wants to do with that particular story and has a very nice voice. So I don't listen to a lot of books. Audiobooks, but I do like when I hear Neil Gaiman reading.
I think I read a book by Neil Gaiman's wife, but I haven't read a Neil Gaiman book.
Has Amanda Palmer written a book?
Yes, she has.
Oh, okay.
It goes with her, it's kind of related to her TED Talk.
Aha, okay, yep.
It's interesting from a marketing perspective as well, because it's about giving things away and asking for things.
Are you from Denver originally?
No, I've lived a lot of places, but I grew up mostly in Texas.
Aha, okay. So what brought you to Denver, if that's not too personal?
No, I did some of my schooling in upstate New York, and that did not work out because it is too cold in upstate New York. And so I just had to get out of there. And going from Texas to upstate New York culturally was really hard on me as well, because Texas, like, the people really are very nice and accepting and things like that. And people in New York can be nice and accepting, but you have to earn it. It's a lot. It's very different. You're not given the benefit of the doubt. Like, they kind of assume you're a jerk. And in Texas, they kind of assume that you're just fine, that you're a nice person. And so culturally, like, I was maybe not a great, like, it was just too hard, too many changes for an 18-year-old. So I kind of split the difference and went to Colorado. So, and here you can ski and snowboard, and it's beautiful. So, and that was high on my list in college. And also I was on the debate team, and they had a good debate team. So, and the school that I had gone to in New York, they had said they had a debate team, but they did not. The guidance counselor did not know that there was a difference between debate and mock trial. And I don't do mock trial, or I didn't. It wasn't my interest. I wanted to debate. So that's super nerdy. Now everyone knows I was a debate nerd.
Okay, so they have a good debate team. Now, is this like how people, when they're training for a marathon, they'll train in Denver because it is the air is thinner, and so when they get back into the normal, let's say, ground level, that they have that extra step? Is that the same thing for debate?
No, it doesn't work quite like that. I mean, there are other things that might slow you down in Denver, like the brownies, but, you know, as long as maybe people struggle to get enough air in their lungs while they're, like, going through a killer argument, but I don't think so.
Okay. So in
the beer hits you harder here as well. So if you're a drinker, it's actually advantageous to do debates on home turf, because we're all used to drinking at altitude.
That's right. And Denver, Colorado in general has a pretty strong brewing tradition. Do you
have
any particular favorites over there? Is there a local brew that you like?
Well, so I'm not a beer drinker, but Fat Tire is kind of the go-to if you're not sure what you want. Fat Tire is usually a safe bet. Mm-hmm. And that was brewed where I went to school in Fort Collins, in New Belgium Brewery, and you can do tours and stuff like that. Lots of microbrews. They also do, there's a budding industry for ciders, alcoholic ciders, and I like that a lot more.
Oh, okay.
That's cool. But I don't have a favorite. I'm kind of just a connoisseur.
Uh-huh. Okay. So reading through some things about you before we did this podcast, I see that you have been credited with having invented mobile SEO. So our question for you is, why didn't you name it Crumb SEO?
Because no one would know what that meant.
Uh-huh. Okay. I guess that makes sense.
That's a purely like SEO question. I wanted to rank for things that people were searching for, and no one was searching for that.
I think, because, you know, when you invent something, you have the opportunity to put your name on it. And I feel like you dropped the ball a little bit here.
Maybe. I guess. I need to invent something more unique and more fitting to the name.
All right. Well, I guess we'll stick with what we have here. Know. So you invented mobile SEO. So tell me, what does that mean?
So a very long time ago, I started doing SEO at an agency where I had been doing it at a really small company, and they really didn't even know what it was or what the value was. And then I left that job to go work at an agency. And at the time, and I guess even now, all the important SEOs were writing blog posts, but it was the same thing recycled over and over again. about writing good title tags and good description tags. And I wanted to write something different. And since I just switched jobs, I'd gotten a new phone because I'd gotten a pay raise and I could afford a new phone. And I was noticing that the search results in my new fancy phone were different from the search results on my computer. And I did not want to write the same old thing, but they had asked me to write an article. So I just started investigating that and figuring out why search results on mobile were so different and at that time particularly bad. And that's, I guess, the beginning of what was mobile SEO.
Okay. Now, so for those of us, as you know, we explained before, Chris and I come from outside of the industry. How does something like this, how does something like mobile SEO affect just the average user? Does this make any difference for me? Or is this really just come down to the websites themselves? Or how does this help your average user?
Well, I mean, more than half of the searches are now mobile. And so as a user, you want the right stuff to rank there. And if it doesn't, then you have a bad experience or you have to click around or waste time or do another search. And if you're driving and searching at the same time, you're risking your life and no one wants that. But you shouldn't drive and search or drive and do anything on your phone, but people do it. And so making them type with their thumbs again is just perilous, potentially. So you want them to get their result on the first try.
All right. So Cindy Crumb, saving lives.
I'm saving lives here.
All right. And also, I read an article that you wrote at the end of last year. So it was your predictions for the future. So your predictions for 2018 anyway. So now we're halfway through 2018. One of the things, the first thing you brought up was the blurring the app web line with what I believe were progressive web apps. So how do you feel you did with that one?
Yep.
Were you on the money?
Spot on. Yeah. Because PWAs aren't just mobile anymore either. They're now desktop as well. And Google Maps has transitioned into a PWA. Most people don't notice. Lots of Google products have transitioned to PWAs. Nobody's noticing. Totally. Spot on. I win.
Okay. And what about the cross-device convergence?
That's happening probably at a slower rate than was possible. But I mean, cross-device between phone and TV or phone and voice assistant or whatever. Now you can search for things using your voice on your phone and then cast it to your TV all with, you know, only the click of two buttons. It's happening. There are a lot of kinks to work out. Some of that I know is in process right now in terms of getting easier login and authentication in cross-device situations where if you're logged into your phone, there's not going to be an issue of having to re-log into a computer or re-log into the Chromecast system or whatever. Google's working really hard on handoff for stuff like that. But yeah, I think it's happening. But that'll be a trend. I mean, that's kind of like saying year of mobile. That's going to be happening for the next 10 years.
Uh-huh, okay.
That was an easy. I played it safe there.
All right. And do you have any other predictions for the rest of the year that you would like to share with us here? Some exclusives?
Yeah, totally. So I think that there is a shortage of voice content online, and Google wants to surface more and more voice because they have more and more devices that don't have screens. And they're also getting better at parsing voice, especially when multiple people are talking. They did a demo at Google I/O to show that their voice recording and audio processing systems can tell when you're speaking versus I'm speaking versus someone else is speaking. And they can organize that in a meaningful way. And that's important for a number of reasons to be able to quote and cite people accurately. But also, if you think about the main thing that Google has been surfacing in mobile and in voice queries, and that they've been pushing SEOs to do, more of is Q&A. And they also conveniently noted that they're doubling down on podcasts, and they want to double the number of podcast users and subscriptions and all that in the next year. Why? Because that's voice content. And if they can parse it into a Q&A format, they can have pre-recorded answers to questions. So if I ask my assistant a question, potentially there's a podcast version of the answer that it can just play the clip for me. It can auto clip it, right? And say, well, XYZ podcast reported on blah, blah, blah date this. And then it plays me answering a question in a very witty way. And that's what'll rank potentially. I mean, so there's this shortage, there's a dearth of voice content. And what Google's trying to avoid, I think, is having robot readers reading text off a page when they could have a real voice interaction that feels more native and warm. And so using podcasts to fill that void is a big deal. So for instance, we are in the process of turning all of our blogs on the Mobile Moxie blog into podcasts, and we'll audio record them and then submit them as a podcast feed. Because if that's the new kind of result, or that's even potentially the new kind of result, I want us to be there.
But, you know, all this is happening very, very fast. And I'm just kind of curious, is there a trend that's happening that you're particularly concerned about?
Well, there's a trend that a lot of people are concerned about, which is that some data just came out from Jumpshot saying that even though more than 50% of the searches out there are on mobile devices, 61% of mobile searches don't result in a click. So if you're doing SEO the old school way and you're waiting for people to click through and read your articles or read the content that you've been, you know, creating for 5 years because everyone is saying content is king, that's not going to happen, or that might not happen. And it's less likely to happen on mobile, which is where search is growing. Desktop, it's much more flat. And voice, of course, it's growing like crazy. And they can't see your content in a voice-only search. So it's a refactoring of the whole concept of search, I think. And a lot of SEOs are missing the point. People aren't clicking because they're getting what they need directly in the search, and that's Google's game. That's what they want too. So Google's trying to host more content so that they can parse and represent it wherever the query happens, whether it's voice-only or in a car or on a TV. The more Google hosts, the more they can design a good presentation and interaction layer for it. And we're seeing that more and more with the increase in knowledge graph and the increase in richness in knowledge graph. I don't know if you've looked at the World Cup knowledge graph results, but you should on your phone, because what's happening is they're integrating web articles into the knowledge graph or into the interactive, it's actually a PWA from the sports PWA, but into the interactive experience of the Google World Cup event interaction. They'll have a little, it looks like a chat blurb that in blue with an oval around it, and that button takes you to a web page. That's how they're reintegrating web pages as part of knowledge graph in a larger entity. So it's like either the entity or a page, like when it's a page rather than a domain, they're putting these little integrated links off to that particular page, and the knowledge graphs usually link to a main domain, like FIFA or whatever. But that's a whole re-understanding of how a search result would be. It's not just links to web pages. It's a bunch of information. And then offhand, there might be a link to a web page where it's relevant. Does that make sense? Are you doing the search right now? You should be. Play along. So to build on the idea, what I'm writing about right now is that I say, controversially, that mobile-first indexing is a misnomer. It's really entity-first indexing, and it's about knowledge graph and organizing the information of the world around a stable understanding of the world, aka knowledge graph, because that's much more efficient on Google's resources than indexing it on the link graph, which has to be crawled and maintained all the time. The knowledge graph doesn't change as often, and no one's trying to game it yet, but people are trying to game the link graph all the time in new and clever ways. But things like podcasts don't build up links, and things like videos are less likely to build up links, and all this new stuff like knowledge graph isn't building up links, but it sure does rank at the top. And so I think the old kinds of SEO are fading really quickly, because you can build up links and write all this great content, and if there's a knowledge graph result above you, no one's going to see it. No one's going to see your stuff, because the knowledge graph gives them what they think they want. They'll never know how cool your stuff is.
All right. Well, that definitely sounds like it would be a game changer right there.
Be afraid. Yeah, right. So that's what people should be afraid of. I'm not afraid of it because I see it coming. But I'm afraid for the people who are hedging their bets on link building and content creation that isn't cross-device or isn't linked up with specific entities. If you're betting on, if you're still betting super hard on long tail traffic, that may or may not be the future, because Google's trying to chunk things away from the long tail. Because think about how hard long tail processing is. Like, always coming up with a result, even if it's bad, like the likelihood of getting a great answer in the long tail is lower. I just think the fundamentals are changing. Yes, long tail is still important. And I know people will flame me and say, like, Cindy doesn't understand SEO. I do. I just know that they're trying to do more phrase-based matching, and they're trying harder to find the most important keyword in a query and latch onto that more heavily than looking at every single word in the query as equal or equally relevant. And that's where the long tail comes from. So for instance, let me put this in a real context, because I think I'm getting too esoteric for you. So lots of parents, I'm not a parent, but lots of parents tell me funny stories about their kid using digital assistants to query things. And SEOs see a voice search and they say, well, Google's just transcribing the voice query into text and submitting it, so nothing has changed. And that, I don't think that that's necessarily true. Google is transcribing the query and submitting it, so what we see hasn't changed, but the backend processing has. Because think about how a kid might search for something. If a kid is searching and says, okay, assistant, I say it that way so I don't trigger mine, okay, assistant, play me my favorite song about the dog NGO. And what they're wanting is the Bingo song. Bingo was his name-o. But what Google, that's a really long query where it would pull up results about non-governmental organizations for dogs, you know, rather than my, like, it should be keying into my, and that's why they're now focusing really hard on the being able to tell whose voice is searching. Right? Do you remember all the news about this, where Google had the ability to have different sign-on based on your voice patterns? So they can tell who is searching my song. They know it's a kid. And even if they say my favorite, they're pulling from her repository. And they're like, yeah, 3 days in a row she's asked. But if you think about it, like, if the kid is asked for the same song 3 days in a row, three different ways, they've got to learn how to address that person's needs. And even in a more normal search, like if I say, okay, assistant, find me a recipe for chicken cacciatore that I can cook in 30 minutes, that's also still a really, really long query that they've got to parse and understand the different parts of it. And this is where, like, the Cloud Natural Language API comes in. If you haven't played with it, you should. It shows how Google breaks down sentences and the relationships within the sentences, and how it understands grammar, that this is a modifier of that. So it's understanding chicken cacciatore recipe, cook time 30 minutes. And that's what it's going to search for. It's not going to search for every word that I said in my query, even though it might transcribe them and put them in, the processing of the algorithm is going to focus on what it knows is important and drop out the words that it thinks are not. So yes, the interface on our side looks the same and it looks like it's just transcribing the voice search, but the processing is different now because it's got to cut out the noise. So long tail is going to be harder just because algorithmically they're trying to cut out the noise and long tail can look like noise.
It's like almost like having a good editor. It just kind of breaks down everything, gets you to the point more.
Yeah, it gets you to the point more and people are happier because if I'm searching for, let's say, an example I use a lot is Monty Python. If I'm searching for Monty Python, whether I type it in or use a voice query, doesn't matter. If I'm searching to answer a question like who was the curly-haired guy in Monty Python, I can submit that query to Google. It might be able to know, but even if it doesn't, it's going to show me the knowledge graph with all the participants and I'm going to see the curly-haired guy and I'll be like, oh, that's his name. And if it's a voice-only query, it'll probably just say the members of Monty Python were and start reading their names. And then it'll let you kind of verbally click in and say more about, I want to know more about such and so. And you name the member. But that's not having to know the answer. It's knowing that you'll find the answer by showing you the knowledge graph and that you won't know the difference that Google didn't know the answer.
Let's try now something completely different. Because one of our goals here is to not only to share your knowledge, but also just to kind of give a sense of who you are. And so we kind of created a fun little lightning round for you of questions. And you don't have to explain any of your answers if you don't want. And if there's a question you don't like, you can just say pass.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's go.
Texting or talking?
Talking.
An unknown number. Do you ignore it or pick it up?
Yeah, I do.
Best Halloween candy?
Snickers.
Okay.
You sounded like you disapprove of the Snickers. Sorry.
No, I'm not judging you. No, the Snickers is great, but it's like a rare thing, you know, because if I...
You have to go to the right neighborhoods. You go to the big house neighborhoods.
That's true. All right, cake or pie?
Oh, cake.
Favorite day of the week?
Sunday.
Favorite month?
February.
Favorite season?
Fall.
All right. Favorite city in the U.S. besides the one you live in?
Portland.
Trilingual, bilingual, or American?
American. Unfortunately.
Would you rather be able to speak every language in the world or be able to talk to animals?
Animals, 100%. So much better than humans.
Would you rather cuddle with a baby elephant or a baby panda?
Baby elephant, 100%. This is a question I've actually thought of before.
All right, prepared for that one, I see. Okay, invisibility or super strength?
Oh, that one's tough. I think invisibility.
Kanye West or Adam West?
Neither. Adam West, just for my dad.
Original Batman. That's the good answer. All right. How many hours of sleep do you need?
8.
How many hours of sleep do you get?
Usually 7. I try really hard. This is a life goal to get enough sleep.
Okay. Bert or Ernie?
Bert.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Okay. Using Bert's voice, tell me how you like your coffee.
I can't. I like my coffee with cream.
Giving presents or getting presents?
Getting presents. Because giving presents is stressful, not because I'm greedy, just because I don't like the stress.
Okay. Tomatoes, fruit or a vegetable?
Fruit.
Cranberries, friend or foe?
Friend, big time.
Garlic, too much or not enough?
Never enough.
You would enjoy Christian's cooking then. Okay.
I've made garlic mashed potatoes. I've made garlic mashed potatoes where the garlic in the mashed potatoes was crunchy. Like there was enough that it had a crunch to it. It was good. It was great.
Christian would like your cooking. Okay. All right. How many redheads are you friends with?
So many. Many. Most of the women in SEO tend to be redheads and a few of the men, but I'm a redhead. Lots of, and my mom's a redhead. I love redheads. They're the best. Fiery.
Do you have,
I can't count.
You can't count.
Who would want to count?
All right. Many. We'll go with many. Will we take many as an official answer, Christian?
Yes, we will.
Okay.
Innumerable.
Innumerable. All right. Even better. Do you have any friends taller than 6'4"?
My dad was taller than 6'4". Friends? No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
The easiest way to lose your friendship?
According to my mother, I'm telling you a lot about my parents for some reason, but according to my mother, it's teach a friend to ski. She says that's the best way to ruin any friendship. Just try and teach them to ski and it's over. She says you should always put people in lessons. Uh-huh.
Okay, fair enough.
I said it's a life hack, and I can attest to this. I have I've tried to teach boyfriends to ski, and that was pretty much the end.
All right.
Did not work out.
I don't know how to ski at all, so I won't have to worry too much about teaching anybody how to. Yeah. Okay.
No, go in lessons though. Do not let anyone teach you if you value their friendship.
I've learned something from the podcast as well. I like it. Name a word that starts with the letter Q.
Quintuple.
Quintuple. Good one. What is your favorite word?
Sleep. I'm trying to think of like a really like great sounding word that's fun to say, but I can't come up with one. So sleep. That's easy.
A word you always have difficulty spelling.
Most words. I'm dyslexic. Anything with lots of vowels.
All right. Well, then you can have fun spelling Christian and I's last names when you talk about this podcast later on. So let me see.
Skew comes up a lot.
Oh,
skew,
okay.
Like skewed results. That's a short word that I can't
spell. You go with the double O?
And that's what I try to do.
All right. If there's a spider in your house, do you kill it or set it free?
Kill it. Unfortunately, there are a lot of spiders in my house.
That's the correct way to go. My wife maintains a catch and release policy, but I am not a fan of that myself.
I actually kill, then drown, just in case. I squash, then flush.
Ah, that's, that, so that's, I think that's
a nice death. Not
that's appropriate. Almost like a Viking funeral, but different.
Right.
All right. You can eat only one meal for 1 month. What is it?
One meal three times a day or like two or three? Like, chocolate. It's not nutritional. I would die. Wait, I've got to pick something nutritional. Chocolate's not actually food. It's just sugar. I don't know. Chicken and rice.
Chicken and rice.
Not because it's good, because I would live.
All right. And survival is important. All right. So that is the end of the lightning round. I do have one extra question for you, which is going to be name your five favorite Cindys, spelled any way you like.
I don't know if I have five favorite Cindys. My number one favorite Cindy, I assume I can't be part of the list, but I might run out of Cindys. But I like Cindy Lou Who from the Grinch That Stole Christmas, not the new one, the old one, the cartoon, the canonical one.
Sure.
Cindy Lou Who. I'm okay with, Cindy Lauper. Yeah.
Sure.
Cindy Crawford doesn't bother me. She's all right. Who else? I don't think I can come up with five Cindys. It's not that common of a name. Do you have any to add? Do you want to give me, can we turn it into multiple choice?
well, you took the two answers I was going to prompt with. I was going to say Cindy Lauper. who is my personal favorite, Cindy, and then, you know, Cindy Crawford. But I couldn't think of any, I can't think of anything else. So we'll stick with three. Three is
top three.
And so if I type in, this is going to be where you guess, I type in to Google search, Cindy is, what's an answer?
Oh, God. Awesome. I don't know. I want to do it right now. Can you do it? And
I've already done it. So I'm looking at Cindy is, and you have to guess any one of, let's say, the top five answers for Cindy is. What do you think?
Are you telling me that awesome wasn't there?
Awesome is not there.
Damn it. Cindy is here.
No.
Dead?
Actually, that is in the top 10. Cindy is dead Tumblr, if that means anything.
No.
Yeah.
Or Cindy.
All right. Give me one more guess, and then I'll read you the results here.
Cindy is hot?
No.
Not me, but like Cindy Crawford is hot.
Sure, sure. I bet if we put in Cindy Crawford is, that may finish. But Cindy by itself, we have Cindy is short for. Cindy is a student with TBI.
It's TBI.
I don't know what TBI is. I have no idea. That's going to be my next search. my favorite one is Cindy is
A?
And then nothing. Yes, A. Cindy is A, and then nothing.
Nothing. Put it in. When you Cindy type is, it, then what are the next results?
So Cindy is a student with TBI. I don't know why this is the number one answer. Cindy is a nickname for what name?
Okay.
Cindy is a genetic female. Cindy is a fish when she swims.
Of course Cindy is a fish when she swims.
Oh. Yeah. Cindy is an accomplished lawyer who sought psychological help.
Okay. Unfortunately, TBI stands for traumatic brain injury. I just searched for it. Cindy is a student, but that doesn't make sense.
Uh-huh.
Cindy is a student at TBI does not make sense. Hold on. Let's see what ranks for Cindy as a student with TBI. That'll tell us what it is. A bunch of videos. Videos are the future, man. Videos and audio. Oh, yeah. Special ed. You're right. Quizlet. Okay. Continue. Sorry. I'm ruining the podcast.
No, it's always fun. Are there any, let's say, last words you would like to leave us with before we go?
If you don't mind, I want to tell people that Mobile Moxie has an awesome tool set.
Please do.
Because I feel I'm struggling. Like, I've always sold consulting, and selling software and tools is a whole different thing. So I'm just going to be like bold and blatant about it and be like, our tools are awesome and everyone should check them out. And there's a bunch of promo codes out on the internet, but I'll give you guys, do we want to make the promo code Bartosh's name, and anyone who can spell it wins 2 free months? All lowercase Bartosh gets you 2 free months in the Mobile Moxie tool set. But basically what we were talking about earlier, like most of the SEO tools aren't tracking knowledge graph, and they're giving you rankings where if you say like we're ranking in position 3, well, what does that mean if you're below a knowledge graph, a map pack, and an app pack? Like position 3 is useless. So our tools are the workaround for that, because they actually show you what real results look like on a bunch of different phones. Whether you're standing anywhere in the world, you can put in an address and see what a search result looks like. So it's great for local businesses and local SEOs. And I'll stop there, but they're awesome and you guys should check it out. And I'll make the promo code right now.
All right. So I think that's going to be it for us for today. Thank you so very much, Cindy, for sharing your time with us. We really do appreciate it. That was a fun conversation.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Bye.
You have been listening to Elephate in the Room, hosted by Derek Caraview, produced by Christian A. Dumais. Music by Giant Monsters on the Horizon. This podcast is a part of Elephate, the 2018 European Search Awards winner for Best Small SEO Agency. Follow Elephate on Twitter at ElephateSEO and on Facebook at Elephate. Thanks for joining us, and see you next time.